He entered the reading room with measured tread and one single pointed intent, to trace the Reichslance in the Schatzkammer of the Hofburg back through the centuries before it was mentioned openly in history during the reign of the German Emperor Otto the Great. It was not long before capable use of the catalogs and various works of historical reference uncovered a whole number of spears which had made greater or lesser claims in some period of history to be the spear which pierced the side of Jesus Christ at the crucifixion. Adolf Hitler quickly overcame his consternation at this unexpected turn of events. He was sure that a diligent search would soon reveal which was the actual spear of Longinus. He had always been passionately fond of history, the only subject at which he had really shone at school. And this earnest youth, who was later to claim that a man without a sense of history is a man without ears and eyes, found little difficulty in sorting out the merits of the various spears purporting to be the weapon of the Roman centurion Longinus, which were scattered around the palaces, museums, cathedrals, and churches of Europe. One such spear, or at least part of it, the shaft, was hanging in the Great Hall of the Vatican, but the Roman Catholic Church made no serious claims as to its authenticity. Another spear was to be found in Krakow in Poland, but Adolf Hitler soon discovered that that one was an exact replica of the Hofburg spear he was looking at, without the nail inserted, copied on the orders of Otto III as a gift to Boleslav, the Brave, on the occasion of some Christian pilgrimage. Yet another spear, about which the claims had more substance, had been associated with the early Christian Father John Chrysostomus. Better put my glasses on, I guess. The spear, which many believe to be the spear forged by the ancient Hebrew prophet Phinehas, had been brought to Paris from Constantinople in the 13th century by King Louis the Saint on his return from the Crusades. It was said to have attracted the interest of the great Dominican scholastic Thomas Aquinas. Adolf Hitler was excited to find, am I boring you? One spear which appeared to have been associated with a legend of world destiny throughout its entire history. This spear, dating back to the 3rd century, had apparently been traced by numerous historians right through to the 10th century, to the reign of the Saxon king Heinrich I, the Fowler, where it was last mentioned in his hands at the famous Battle of Unstrut, in which the Saxon cavalry conquered the marauding Magyars. After this battle, 10th century. After this battle, 10th century, the spear mysteriously disappeared from history, for it was neither present at Heinrich's death at Quedlinburg, nor at the coronation of his equally illustrious son, Otto the Great, the first recorded possessor of the Reichslance in the treasure house of the Hofburg. The Hofburg spear received its first recorded mention in the ancient Saxon chronicle at the Battle of Lech near Vienna, where Otto gained a resounding victory over the Mongolian hordes whose formidable horse archers had carried their devastations to the very heart of Europe. The next mention of the spear, also attributed with legendary powers, was when Otto knelt in Rome before Pope John XII to be touched with the very spear itself upon the shoulders as a holy rite to establish his claim as Holy Roman Emperor. Remember the eagle? Adolf Hitler, even then so contemptuous of the effeteness of intellectuals and official scholars with long titles, was convinced that his own further researches would bridge the gap and establish that it was the identical spear which passed unrecorded between father and son, both great Saxon heroes. And Heinrich Himmler was given the task to assemble the intellectuals to find this connection. I'm going to tell you, it wasn't found. But through the occult, Hitler claimed to establish it. And having done that, he then became enamored to trace its earlier history. Poring over the books, tracing the path of the spear through the centuries, and assessing the illustrious lives and dynasties of power of the chain of men who possessed it and claimed to wield its powers, Hitler was excited to find that in century after century, the astonishing legend of the spear had been fulfilled for good or evil. Mauritius, the commander of the Theban Legion, had retained the spear in his grasp in his last dying breath when he was martyred by the Roman tyrant Maximian for refusing to worship the pagan gods of Rome. The Theban Legion had been ensnared from Egypt on the orders of Diocletian to attend the mass assembly of the Roman armies at La Vallée, where a pagan festival of sacrifice, 285 A.D., was held to renew the waning fervor of the legions for the pantheon of the Roman gods. Mauritius, a Manichaean Christian, now we're into the Gnostic controversies that frustrate me that I couldn't finish how we got our Bible and the controversies of doctrine in the first three centuries that planted the seed for the Gnostic controversy. And it is Gnostics, the Cathars, in the south of France that possess the treasure in Holy Blood, Holy Grail. I thought I'd throw that in. Mauritius, a Manichaean Christian, had protested against Maximian's threat to decimate his legion for their Christian faith. And as a final gesture of passive resistance, Mauritius had knelt down in front of the ranks of his own soldiers to offer himself for decapitation in their stead. His last recorded words were, "In Christo morimur." The veterans of the Theban Legion, inspired by this example of passive resistance, elected to die with their leader rather than worship the Roman gods in whom they no longer believed, but they were Gnostics. Not even the decapitation of every tenth man could change their minds. Altogether, that day, 6,666 legionnaires, the most highly disciplined force in Roman military history, divested themselves of their weapons and knelt to bare their necks for slaughter. Maximian made the dreadful decision to massacre the whole legion as an offering of sacrifice to his gods, the Roman gods, the most terrifying single rite of human sacrifice in the history of the ancient world. The bloody spectacle, footnote here, of the martyrdom of the Theban Legion was outstripped 1,000 years later by the monstrous Roman Catholic Inquisition of the Cathars and the Albigensians, Manichees or Manichaeans in Toulouse, when 60,000 passive resistors, men, women, and children, were burned or put to the sword in a single day. Only the gas ovens of Auschwitz and others in Germany were to match this deed in bestial cruelty and demonic intent. The martyrdom of the Theban Legion had softened the underbelly of the pagan world and paved the way for the meteoric career of Constantine the Great and the conversion of the Roman Emperor to Christianity. In the horror of what happened, you may have missed the sentence. Mauritius, the commander of the Theban Legion, had retained the spear in his grasp in his last dying breath as he was martyred to lead the way for these Manichaean Christian Theban Legion Roman soldiers. Constantine the Great, one of the most enigmatic world figures, claimed he was guided through providence when holding the spear of Longinus at the epic-making battle on the Milvian Bridge outside Rome, when he set the stage for conquering the divided, two-headed Roman Empire. This battle settled the rulership of the Roman Empire and led directly to the proclamation of Christianity as the official religion of Rome. Everybody hears about the vision of the cross. How many of you heard about the spear in Constantine's hands? Nobody. Where have the historians been? Now, the Catholic Church saw advantage in perpetuating the story of the cross. The realistic, no miraculous, no supernatural historians make sure the spear disappears. Later, the wily Constantine wielded the serpent power of the spear to defeat the passive resistance of the dove in order to yoke the new religion in subservience to his own personal ambitions for the perpetuity of the martial spirit of the Rome of Romulus, grasping the holy talisman of power, the spear, and revelation, the spear, to his breast before the assembled church fathers at the first ever ecumenical council, when as the 13th apostle dressed in imperial purple, he himself had the audacity to promulgate the dogma of the Trinity and impose it on the church, and in his old age, when building the new Rome in Constantinople, a bastion which would withstand all assaults for 1,000 years, Constantine carried the spear in front of him when treading out the boundaries on the side of the new city, saying, "I follow in the steps of him who I see walking ahead of me." The spear had played a conspicuous role through the centuries of the gradual decline of the Roman Empire, both in resisting the invasions from the north and east and in converting the barbarians to the new faith and the Roman cause. Hitler was impressed with how the spear had changed hands generation by generation, passing from hand to hand in a chain of claimants who held it with ever-changing motives. Men like Theodosius, who tamed the Goths with it, 385 A.D., Alaric the Bold, the savage convert to Christianity who claimed the spear after he sacked Rome, 410 A.D., and Aetius, the last of the Romans and the mighty Visigoth, Theodoric, who rallied Gaul with the spear to vanquish the barbaric hordes of Troy and turn back the ferocious Attila the Hun, 452 A.D. And I might point out the Cathars once. Well, Justinian, the absolutist and ecclesiastical bigot who reconquered the territories of the old Roman Empire and gave his people the famous Codex Juris, had placed the confidence of his great destiny on the spear. He raised the spear aloft when ordering the closing down of the school of Athens, exiling the great Greek scholars from his realm. It was a fatal decision which denuded medieval Europe of Greek thought, mythology, and art, and gave it that special quality of darkness and prejudice which was burst asunder 1,000 years later under the light of the Italian Renaissance. In the 8th and 9th centuries, the spear had continued to be the very pivot of the historical process. For instance, the mystical talisman had become an actual weapon in the hands of the Frankish general, we're in South France now, Karl Martel, the Hammer, as he was known, when he led his army to gain a miraculous victory over the massed forces of the Arabs at Poitiers. Defeat would have meant that the whole of Western Europe would have succumbed to the rule and religion of Islam. Charlemagne, 800 A.D., the first Holy Roman Emperor, had founded his whole dynasty on the possession of the spear, and its legend of world history or world historic destiny, a legend which attracted the greatest scholars in all Europe to serve the civilizing power of the Frankish cause. We're getting now to Merovingian territory, to you who remember Holy Blood, Holy Grail. Charlemagne had fought 47 campaigns with the assurance of the spear's victorious powers. And more than this, the spear had been associated with his phenomenal clairvoyant faculties, through which he discovered the burial place of St. James in Spain, and his uncanny power of anticipating future events, which had given him a halo of saintliness and wisdom. Throughout his life, this fabulous emperor, Charlemagne, had lived and slept within reach of his beloved talisman. He never let that spear out of his reach. Only when he accidentally let it fall from his hands while returning from his victorious campaign did his subjects rightly see it as an augury of tragedy and his imminent death. Hitler, am I boring you?
No, sir.
Became utterly fascinated with the passage of the spear through the era in which all his childhood heroes had lived. He found to his astonishment and delight that the great German figures who had filled his youthful dreams had held the spear as the holy aspiration of their ambitions, their talisman of power. Altogether, 45 emperors had claimed the spear of destiny as their possession between the coronation in Rome of Charlemagne and the fall of the old German Empire exactly 1,000 years later. And what a pageantry of power and gallantry it was to him. The Spirit passed like the very finger of destiny through the millennium, forever creating new patterns of fate which had again and again changed the entire history of Europe. The five Saxon emperors who had succeeded the Carolingians in the possession of this talisman of power, men like Otto the Great, had lived illustrious lives of world historic significance. However, it was the seven incredible Hohenstaufens of Swabia, or Swabia, including the legendary Frederick Barbarossa and Frederick II, his grandson, who excited Adolf Hitler's imagination most of all. Here, indeed, were Germans of incomparable greatness. Frederick Barbarossa, 1152 to 1190, who had united in his blood the feuding Welfs and Swabians, had the qualities of a monarch Hitler could really admire. Chivalry, courage, unlimited energy, great joy in battle, love of adventure, startling initiative, and above all, a certain harshness, which gave him the ability to both frighten and charm at the same time. Frederick Barbarossa. Hitler named his retreat in the fastness of Obersalzberg Barbarossa. I'm leaving some cities right now. You'll just have to let me go out talking. Do I stop? Frederick Barbarossa, who fancied he could reestablish the Roman Empire without the Roman legions, had conquered all Italy, proving himself supreme even over the Roman pontiff himself, defeating Rome and leading the personal assault on the Vatican to drive the Pope into exile. Later, he had knelt in Venice with the spear in his hands as he kissed the feet of the Pope he had once defeated, but only as a ruse to play for time to reconquer Italy. Finally, Barbarossa had died when crossing a stream in Sicily, and the spear fell from his hand at the very moment of his death, even eclipsing the magnificent Barbarossa himself was. Frederick II Hohenstaufen, 1212 to 50. Frederick II Hohenstaufen, who had arisen like a brilliant comet into European history and rocked it to its very foundation. A man of charismatic personality, rare genius, and legendary occult powers, fluent in six languages, the chivalrous knight and the lyric poet who inspired his many singers to chant about the Holy Grail. The incomparable Frederick was also a patron of the arts, a skillful and courageous commander in the field of battle, a statesman of infinite subtlety and an enigmatic soul, part saint, part devil. Nurtured in Sicily, then part of the extensive German empire, this prince of Swabian blood spoke Arabic with his Saracen soldiers, kept a large harem, penned the first scientific thesis on Hawking, believed in astrology, and practiced alchemy. Prizing the possession of the spear beyond all things, he made it the focal point of his whole life, especially calling on its powers during his crusades, in which Francis of Assisi once carried the spear on an errand of mercy, and throughout his running battles with the Italian states and papal armies. The most important discovery of all for the young Hitler, tracing the history of the Spear of Destiny, did not concern either emperors or their dynasties of power. It was the discovery that the spear had been the inspiration for the founding of the Teutonic Knights, the Templars equivalent along the Baltic Sea who controlled the amber trade. You'll encounter them in, you don't want to read heavy stuff, in Missioners Poland. It was the discovery that the spear had been the inspiration. Am I boring you? It was the discovery that the spear had been, you know, everybody tries to explain history and everything with no supernatural. Now, doesn't matter whether you believe the spirit had this power or not. A lot of these people did. And they weren't any second-rate individuals. It was the discovery that the spirit had been the inspiration for the founding of the Teutonic Knights, whose chivalrous and courageous deeds and whose irreversible vows and aesthetic disciplines had been the very substance of his childhood dreams. Adolf Hitler spent 3 days... You can turn the cooler back on, Mike. Adolf Hitler spent 3 days in his first tentative researches into the history of the Spear of Longinus. And there are people that think they're experts on Hitler that haven't spent 3 hours on this subject. Perhaps he felt a tingling in his spine as he strode across the library to pull out from the shelves the works of the great German philosopher Hegel, for it seemed to Hitler that the men who had claimed the spear throughout history and fulfilled its legend fitted into Hegel's description of world historic heroes. To skip over the Hegel part, it was late in the afternoon when Hitler entered the Schatzkammer with awe and fear in his heart to take his second look at the Heilige Lance. In the following 3 years, he was to make countless such pilgrimages to this same spot to scrutinize the ancient weapon and wean it of its secrets. Once again, his immediate experience was one of complete bafflement. He could feel something strange and powerful emanating from the iron spearhead, which he could not readily identify. He stood there for a long while, perplexed by its inscrutable riddle. Quoting Hitler, "Studying minutely every physical detail of its shape, color, and substance, yet trying to remain open to its message, I slowly became aware of a mighty presence around it," he says. "The same awesome presence which I had experienced inwardly on those rare occasions in my life when I had sensed that a great destiny awaited me." He sensed it was a bridge between the world of sense and the world of the spirit. Adolf Hitler later claimed that it was on this occasion, while he was standing before the spear, that, quote, "a window in the future was opened up to me through which I saw in a single flash of illumination a future event by which I knew beyond contradiction that the blood in my veins would one day become the vessel of the folk spirit of my people." Adolf Hitler left the Hofburg Treasure House that evening with the indelible conviction that he himself would one day step forward to claim the Spear of Destiny as his own personal possession, and that he would fulfill a world historic role with it. Walter Stein, Johannes, or Walter Stein, I think I referred to this once before and mistakenly said Rudolf Steiner. Rudolf Steiner is involved, but Stein was the one who did it. Walter Stein could not have foreseen the day that he accompanied Hitler to the treasure house in Vienna on another occasion, September 1912. That Adolf Hitler would channelize demoniac powers and harness his personal destiny so completely to the legendary evil purposes and side of the spear. Quoting Stein, "At that time, when we first stood side by side in front of the spear of Longinus," Dr. Stein told me 35 years later, "it appeared to me that Hitler was in so deep a condition of trance that he was suffering almost complete sense denudation and a total eclipse of self-consciousness." Describing the scene, Walter Stein, standing in front of the spear and moved himself, found that he was not the only one moved by the sight of the spearhead. Adolf Hitler stood beside him like a man in a trance, a man over whom some dreadful magic spell had been cast. His face was flushed, and his brooding eyes shone with an alien emanation. He was swaying on his feet as though caught up in some totally inexplicable euphoria. The very space around him seemed enlivened with some subtle irradiation, a kind of ghostly ectoplasmic light. His whole physiognomy and stance appeared transformed, as if some mighty spirit now inhabited his very soul, creating within and around him a kind of evil transfiguration of its own nature and power. Not boring you?
No, sir.
The spear of longinus had been the inspiration of Hitler's whole life. Let's go down to the Führer's days. And the key to his meteoric rise to power. And although that was true, it was more than a quarter of a century since he had last seen it, and nearly 30 years since he had first beheld it, heard of its unique legend, researched it in the library. Whatever Hitler's visions on this occasion, the scene of the German Führer standing there before the ancient weapon must be regarded as the most critical moment of the 20th century. Until the Americans claimed the spear in Nuremberg in 1945, and while holding it in their possession, inaugurated the atomic age by dropping their atom bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The British, French, Russian, and Czechoslovakian governments had not lifted a finger to stop Adolf Hitler's annexation of Austria. They paid no attention to the role of the spear, whether it has any power or not. It gave that sense to these conquerors. They hadn't lifted a finger to stop Adolf Hitler's annexation of Austria, which they regarded as no more than the inevitable union between two German peoples who shared the same heritage, language, and culture. Only the solitary voice of Winston Churchill warned the world, and it was Stein, not Steiner, that was his expert on Hitler during the war. Churchill knew his passion for this sword. The same night that he marched into Vienna would be known in Vienna as the Night of the Terror, or the Night of Revenge. On Hitler's personal orders from the Imperial Hotel, the most dreadful pogrom was initiated against the large, rich, and influential Jewish population. In the coming days, 70,000 Jews would be arrested. A new concentration camp set up on the north bank of the Danube, Mauthausen. Reinhard Heydrich was quickly doing a brisk trade with a new department named the Office for Jewish Immigration. Later, under the direction of Karl Eichmann, it would switch its role. This was the night of decision. The time had come to cast away the instruments of guile and political cunning. From this moment forward, Adolf Hitler would strike out openly to achieve his ultimate aim, the conquest of the world. On this occasion, unlike his previous visits to the treasure house, there were no guards, petty officials, and attendants to keep a suspicious and wary eye on an unkempt outcast. The successor to the Habsburg emperors, having taken Vienna, was free to remove the ancient weapon from its faded red velvet dice behind the protecting glass case.
This is the end of Side 3. For the rest of the teaching, please turn the tape over for Side 4. Thank you.